All rise. Oye, oye, oye. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. Thank you, sir.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here. I'm Chief Judge Allen, and to my right is Judge Meredith. To my left is Judge Jaquith, and we're convened today to consider the arguments in Robert P. D. versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 227098. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Kenny DeHakis for the appellant.
Thank you, Mr. DeHakis. Secretary's counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sarah Long for the secretary, along with my co-counsel, Mark Hamill.
Thank you, Ms. Long. I see you. And Mr. DeHakis, I understand you want to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll make that happen, and you can begin whenever you'd like.
All right. Good morning, and may it please the court. On behalf of Mr. D, I want to thank the court for this opportunity to present his appeal. Before this court is Mr. D's claims for compensation benefits for his knees. There are two issues, but our presentation today will focus primarily on the 2010 ratings. Mr. D is asking for this court to set aside the board's ruling on the 1995 Q because its reasons and basis are inadequate, as we explained in our briefing. He also asked the court to interpret Diagnostic Code 5003 to require VA to assign separate 10% ratings under Diagnostic Codes 5260 and 5261 when, as here, the arthritis causes limited flexion and limited extension in the knee. And with respect to the right knee, Mr. D is asking for a remand so that the board can, under the correct law, make initial findings of fact with respect to what disability is present in that knee. And the reason the remand's needed in that case is because it was a little unclear about what precise disabilities there are. There was some limited flexion, and then there were some other symptoms that we highlighted in our briefing. The plain meaning of Diagnostic Code 5003, and within the context of the overall compensation scheme, requires that VAs to rate arthritis as limited motion for each and every separate diagnostic code under that joint. If the limited motion qualifies for a specific rating, then the VA is to assign that rating. If, however, the limited motion is non-compensable, then VA is to assign a 10% rating. So the facts are clear. The board determined that in 2010, Mr. D's left knee had a range of motion from 10 to 105 degrees. Where normal is 0 to 140. So the undisputed facts, that specifically with respect to the left knee, there was limited flexion and limited extension. Before we get into the language of the regulation, though, I do want to highlight some basic precepts for rating any disability. First, 1110 directs the VA will pay compensation for all disability resulting from an injury or disease. 4.25B clearly articulates that the disabilities arising from that single disease, here arthritis, which is specifically listed in an example, are to be rated separately. So when there is more than one disabilities, in Saunders, the Federal Circuit interpreted disability in 1110 to mean functional impairment. And then there's the regulations, which the cases that we've cited, Mitchell, Petiti, and others, have talked about. In particular, 4.40 describes disability in the joints as the inability to perform the normal working movements of the body. And in 4.45, the regulation says that factors of disability reside in the reductions of their normal excursions of movement in different planes, and specifically highlights less movement than normal as one of those factors. So what we know is that limitation of motion is a disability as a matter of law. The regulation says it, Saunders says it, and so anytime there's less movement than normal, it is a disability and must be compensated when it arises out of arthritis, which was incurred during service.
Mr. Tarkas, can I ask you a question which isn't directly tied to what you're saying now? It's sort of a step back. At several points in the briefing, as you know better than I do, it's a pretty complex procedural history here. And at times you mention that there was a rating under 5257 for instability, I think. And without being precise, there's a lot of weirdness that went along with that. And you mentioned that a few times. But I couldn't tell whether you were making an argument about the fact that you think the change from 5257 to something else was problematic because it was protected and you want us to do something about that, or that was just context in the context of the claim.
Right, Your Honor. So Mr. D's position is that when he so let's step back to the procedural history because it's important to understand. The direct answer is we want the court to order the board to reinstate these protected ratings on the knees. On the left knee, it's been in place for 10% for well over 20 years, which under both 1159.
And could I just stop you for 1 second? I just want to make sure I follow it. What you just said, I just want to make clear, right, is in addition to the relief you were requesting under 5003, which is to say it means that limitation of flexion and extension, each one is a separate disability for purposes of that. I'm shorthanding this, right? That is separate from now what we're talking about here, which is 5257.
Yes, Your Honor.
So has the board sufficiently decided something about 5257 that is actually before us? That's what I'm struggling with a little bit.
Right, Your Honor. And I do, looking back at my briefing, I recognize I did not do a great job of explaining that, and there were a lot of typos in there. I don't know what happened at that time, but I tried to clean it up as best I could in the reply brief and in the supplemental briefing. But when Mr. D filed his motions to revise the prior decisions in 2016, the board revised the 2010 decision. And what's important to understand is that then replaces that decision and essentially becomes the decision based on that 2010 or 2009 claim, whatever it was filed. At that time, those ratings were protected, whether it was 2010 with the 95 rating or in 2020 when the board issued its decision, certainly they were 10 and 20 year protected. So we think that when the board revised that decision, it replaced, per the statute, replaces that and should have recognized the protected nature of those ratings under 5257. It also should have recognized, to the extent that the AOJ changed any of those rating codes in 2010, should have recognized that they were protected and corrected that as well. So, the briefing was not entirely clear on that, and I do understand that, but we do think that based on the procedural history and how it got to the board, to the court the first time, and now here today, that there was, and the board did address the ratings of the knees. And because of that, they should have recognized the protected nature of those 5257 ratings.
And just so I'm clear, that issue about assume that we were to say we can't look at the 5257 or it's a separate theory of Q or something, just that doesn't impact, as far as you're concerned, our ability to answer the DC 5003 question.
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
So one other regulation that I want to highlight is 4.27, and this regulation says that the VA must take great care will be exercised in the selection of the applicable diagnostic codes. And this regulation talks about how to build up diagnostic codes, talks about creating hyphenated diagnostic codes, and one part in particular says is with diseases as arthritis, preferences are given to the number assigned to the disease itself. If the rating is determined on the basis of residual conditions, the number appropriate to the residual condition will be added, preceded by a hyphen. So what this means is when the VA rates arthritis, and there is, and it results in limited flexion, it should be a diagnostic code 5003-5260. And then if there's extension, limitation of extension, 5003-5261. So a large part of the confusion is how the board cited the diagnostic codes. It lists 5260 twice. It flips them with the 5003. But what we do know based on the undisputed facts, again, is that Mr. D has limited flexion and limited extension in his left knee. He has limited flexion in the right knee and other symptoms that we identify, the pain and the popping, which needs to be described or explained by the board, whether that entitles or represents any other functional impairment that would entitle him to a different rating, either under 5261, which we think is probably the appropriate rating code, or some other.
Mr. Dehakis, isn't the problem with your 5003 argument that diagnostic code is based on the joint and doesn't go code by code or manifestation by manifestation?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I recognize that it talks about the joint, but what I think we need to understand, again, looking at 1110 and 4.25B, those two, in particular 4.25B, explicitly says to rate each disability arising from the disease. So when the disease of arthritis is being rated, the first part of it says that it will be rated on the basis of limitation of motion under the appropriate diagnostic codes. So when a joint has one diagnostic code for limited motion, like the shoulder, and the shoulder, I think, is a very helpful example because there is just one rating code for limitation of motion in all different directions. So if the arthritis were being rated for the shoulder, there could only be one rating. But here it says under the appropriate diagnostic codes for the joint. And so with the knee, there's two rating codes for limited motion, flexion and extension. General counsel's opinion 9-2004 explicitly recognizes that flexion and extension are separate and distinct impairments subject to their own ratings. So the next sentence then says, when, however, and Mitchell, our briefing talked about the use of however, Mitchell also highlighted this, the limitation of motion in the joint is non-compensable under the appropriate codes, referring back to one or more diagnostic codes, then the 10% is for application for each joint affected by limitation of motion. So, Mr. D, our position is that when you read this as a whole, it has to incorporate the very clear intent of Congress in 1110 and the Secretary in 4.25B to compensate for each and every disability. And so when there is flexion that's limited and there is extension which is limited, the first sentence says rate it. If it matches the criteria for a rating, then you're good. You've gotten that. If it doesn't, though, if it's non-compensable, then assign a 10% rate.
Counselor, you just pointed out the phrase under the appropriate diagnostic code that appears in the first sentence and the second sentence of diagnostic code 5003. What is your interpretation of what it means in the first sentence where it says rate based on limitation of motion under the appropriate diagnostic code? Is that referring to the full array of diagnostic codes that might touch on limitation of motion for the joint?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay, so then in the second sentence where it says under the appropriate diagnostic codes, it's non-compensable. The limitation motion is non-compensable under those diagnostic codes. So how do you read under the appropriate diagnostic codes in the second sentence? Is it also referring to the full array of diagnostic codes?
Yes, Your Honor, because I think the best way to look at it is that, as I said, some joints have one rating code, the ankle, the shoulder, the spine. Some have multiple, the knee, the elbow, the hip has, I think, three different diagnostic codes for range of motion. Each of those represents a separate disability that separately limits the functioning of the veteran in a different way.
So I guess it's more of a grammar question. The regulation says the limitation of motion for the specific joint involved is non-compensable under the appropriate diagnostic codes, which you're saying refers to the full array of diagnostic codes dealing with limitation motion. So why wouldn't you read that more naturally as saying it's not compensable under the full array of diagnostic codes?
Because, again, going back to 4.25B and 1110, the VA has to compensate for everything. So when this when the regulation refers to diagnostic codes in the plural, it should be read to encompass any applicable diagnostic codes. If there's one, then there's one. If there's two or three, then we look at all of those. But then when you look at the rest of that sentence, a 10% is for application for each joint affected by limitation of motion. So when you have limitation of flexion, and you can introduce in there, they say limitation of motion, but I think it's very helpful if we...
Each major joint. But let me get back to the first part of the sentence that you just mentioned. Basically, in the second sentence, it says that when the limitation of motion is non-compensable, then give a 10% for that joint. How do we read language that says when limitation is non-compensable, how do we read that as saying there is some limitation that is compensable? What is your analysis there as to the plain language?
Can you rephrase it, Your Honor? I'm not sure I understand.
Sure. The second sentence of Diagnostic Code 503 says, when the limitation of motion is non-compensable, then you give a 10% rating. Your reading seems to be that some limitation of motion could be compensable. I want you to describe how you get there based on the plain language of the regulation.
Right. So this situation, the facts in this case, I think demonstrate that, and I hope this is answering your question, Your Honor. So Mr. D has limited limited extension to 10 degrees. That qualifies him for a 10% rating under the diagnostic code. So he now has a compensable limitation of extension recognized by the code. He also separately has limitation of flexion, which is non-compensable. And so when we're looking at the two sentences, the first one says to rate it under all the applicable diagnostic codes for the knee, there's two. Then it says when those are not, and our reading is when any of those is not compensable,
so
then you get a 10%.
Well, that any of them are not compensable.
Well, I don't think I'm adding language, Your Honor. The reason why that's the appropriate rating is because it's when, however, is referring back to the prior sentence, and the prior sentence clearly directs the VA to rate each individual diagnostic code separately. And so when we're looking at the second sentence, we have to refer back to the first sentence and take into account the fact that each of them is getting its own separate rating. And again, under 1110 and 4.25B, and I will beat this drum forever as long as I'm representing veterans, these two laws in particular really require the VA to compensate each and every resulting disability. And this regulation, in addition to 4.59, clearly recognizes that any limited motion, whether it's painful under 4.59 or actually limited under 5003, is productive of disability and is entitled to the minimum compensable rating for that specific impairment. So the joint itself is not being rated. It's the resulting functional impairment, the disability that is produced, that results from the arthritis that we're rating. And so if we only assign a single 10% rating, this leaves uncompensated Mr. D's limited flexion in each of his knees, or specifically in the left knee.
Well, sure, the separate ratings for separate manifestations is the usual application of 4.25, but the array of regulations that apply to this situation and DC 5003 itself specifically refer to the joint, not the manifestations. And regulations like 4.40, 4.45, 4.59 are all joint-based, not specific manifestations of a disabling condition.
That's correct, Your Honor, except, again, we have to read them within the context of 4.25, and the disability is defined by Saunders as functional impairment. And in particular, 4.45 talks about less movement than normal. That's the very first factor that it lists as productive of disability. And so when we have a specific diagnostic code, and I would just point the court to Copeland. I don't know if we cited it in our briefing, but Sowers also says this. When a condition is specifically listed in the rating schedule, it may not be rated by analogy. And so when there's limitation of flexion, the VA must rate it under the diagnostic code for limitation of flexion. It can't rate it under something else because the law says it has to be rated separately, and it has to be rated under the specific diagnostic code that's assigned for that disability.
But this rating, it would be under 5003, not under 5260.
Well, but 5003 directs the VA, Your Honor, to rate it based on its limited motion. So we have the arthritis itself is the disease, and the resulting disabilities are the limited flexion and the limited extension, and then whatever other symptoms and other impairments that the board identified in its decision. So it can, because the diagnostic code itself says to rate it based on that, 4.27 says to hyphenate the code and identify the source of the disability, arthritis, but we're still rating the functional impairment, which is the inability to fully flex or fully extend the knee. That's what the disability is. And I think that it's really important that we keep in mind that Saunders in particular talked about the functional impairment, not the manifestation, not the observation that he couldn't flex his knee entirely, or the pain sensation that he's experiencing. And that's what Mitchell was all about, really, too. Mitchell recognized that, look, you can have pain, but if it doesn't cause you if it doesn't cause a reduction in your functioning, it's not a disability under these laws. But here we know as an undisputed fact that his arthritis, with or without pain, and we're not asserting that the pain is causing any of this, there is actually limited flexion and actually limited extension. Those are disabilities, and under 4.25 and 1110, they have to be compensated appropriately.
How does your argument account for the counter that this way of applying 5003 could give somebody with pain that doesn't create functional impairment in both extension and flexion a higher rating than somebody who has functional impairment in both extension and flexion?
I think, Your Honor, that they would both be equally compensated, provided that the source of the disability is arthritis. So if there is arthritis, and Mr. D's example is, I think, a perfect illustration. He has documented limited flexion extension in one leg, and in the other he has limited flexion and other symptoms, which may or may not represent a separate disability. But 4.59 tells us, particularly with arthritis, but in other situations as well, that painful motion is productive of disability. And that's what Petitti held. Petitti talked about the interaction between 5002, which is basically the same language as 5003, and 4.59, and held specifically that painful motion is limited motion underneath this diagnostic code. And I think that the way I read the regulation is that arthritis and, you know, I have arthritis in my knees, and I can tell you that it hurts. And it's recognizing that the arthritis itself is causing functional impairment in both flexion and extension, and so it represents a separate impairment and a separate functional disability.
Counsel, can I follow up on your discussion of 4.59? In the board decision on appeal as to the left knee, the board's ultimate conclusion was actually that 10% for painful motion under 4.59 is not available. Did the board do the right analysis as to the left knee? As opposed to under 5003 for limited motion? And how would they have been different?
Potentially, Your Honor, but we're not asking for a rating under 4.59 on the left knee because he has documented limited flexion
right,
and extension.
The board didn't talk about 5003 with regard to the left knee. Their conclusion was that it was under 4.59.
Right. And so to the extent that we're analyzing 4.59 in conjunction with 5003, that's incorrect because, as Petitti held, painful motion is limited motion. And so that allows the VA, when rating painful motion due to arthritis, as if it's a limited flexion or extension, depending on where the pain exists. And as Mitchell recognized, you know, if the pain stops short of a specific rating, you don't get to keep going even though there's continued pain. You just get the rating up to wherever the motion stops. If there is no limited motion and there's just painful motion, 4.59, 5003 tells us that that's minimally disabling for that range of motion, for that flexion, or for that extension.
Thank you, Mr. Dehopkis. And Ms. Long, you can get a couple of extra minutes if you need them. You don't have to take them, but if you need them, you can have them.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Today we ask you to affirm the August 2022 board decision because DC 5003, by its plain language and structure, makes clear that the three scenarios laid out therein are independent of one another and not interrelated. That is, it creates a series of off-ramps from DC 5003, whereby satisfaction of the first scenario precludes analysis under the second and third scenarios. We can see this first based on the structure of DC 5003. It lays out the conditions in relatively decreasing levels of severity, attenuated by relatively increasing levels of proof. That is, only limitation of motion is required under the first scenario. Under the second scenario, non-compensable limitation of motion attenuated by objective evidence. And under the third scenario, no limitation of motion, but requiring X-ray involvement of multiple major joints or multiple groups of minor joints. This approach is also supported by the court's discussion in Mitchell of 5003 in this context.
Could I ask you to, it doesn't have to be right now, but somewhere in this, weave in a discussion of the precedential opinion, 9-2004.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because it seems to me that one of the awkward parts about the Secretary's argument is that precedent opinion treats the limitation of flexion and limitation of extension as essentially two different disabilities, although they happen to be about the same thing, the knee, mm-hmm. and says you can get both ratings and they're not going to double count. And that seems a little bit in tension to me, perhaps only superficially, with the argument you're asserting about the meaning of 5003.
Yes, Your Honor. So our approach on the precedent opinion 9-2004, flexion and extension are certainly different disabilities. But as that same precedent opinion explains, a veteran can only receive a compensable rating under both 5260 and 5261 in a relatively limited set of circumstances. That being the appellant's entire range of motion has to fall between 5 degrees extension and 60 degrees flexion. It's a relatively, you know, narrow set of circumstances. And to afford an appellant who has non-compensable limitation of motion a higher rating, potentially than an appellant who has actual limitation of motion, would seem to be an absurd result. But our approach is also supported by the plain language of DC 5003. So the word, however, as defined in Mitchell, was used to describe offsetting mutually exclusive alternatives. And Mitchell further confirmed that the approach to 5003 was to be sequential in nature. It described that non-compensable ratings under DCs such as 5260 or 5261 is, quote, a prerequisite to analysis or compensation under the second or third prongs of DC 5003. And even if the court were to reject this approach, only one compensable rating can be assigned for the second scenario of DC 5003. We know this because the DC 5003 notes that consideration of multiple diagnostic codes, thereby being plural, is to be considered before a singular rating of 10% is for application of each major joint or group of joints. But even if this court were for some reason find the regulation ambiguous, substantial deference should still be awarded to the Secretary's interpretation.
So on that front, right, you're talking about Kaiser / our deference, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what is it particularly that you would point us to that sets out the Secretary's reasoned interpretation of the regulation, assuming it's ambiguous?
I think the most specific piece of evidence we have is VA FAST Letter 4-22. That VA FAST Letter specifically states that when joint motion is not limited, but there is objective evidence of pain, whether in flexion, extension, or both, only one compensable evaluation under either of those two codes is appropriate. And goes on to further note that to assign a compensable rating solely based on painful motion for both of those codes would be pyramiding.
And so in terms of the FAST letter, right, why would a FAST letter generically satisfy the standards in Justice Kagan's opinion in Kaiser? In other words, that it is the kind of thing that, well, not a formal regulation, shows the gravitas of the agency taking an official position. A FAST letter, by its very nature, seems hurried, right? It's a FAST letter. So why do you think that counts under Kaiser?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think we can take VA FAST Letter 4-22 in isolation to show that it's the established position of the Secretary. But I think when you layer VA FAST Letter 4-22 on top of GC Precedent Opinion 9-2004 and the concerns I laid out about an appellant who had compensable limitation of motion receiving a lower rating. In addition, VA's M21 reflects our position.
So hold on, right? I just want to, because we're throwing out lots of different sources here, and they all have different levels of, I'm just using the word gravitas, right? So for example, are you saying that the precedent opinion standing alone provides information that would allow us to defer to the full panoply of the interpretation that you're advancing today?
Your Honor, I wouldn't say standing alone, but I think we have to take into account the multiple sources that we have. So I don't want to go back and throw multiple.
This is an open question after Kaiser, right? Mm-hmm. Because the question would be, let's just assume, I'm not saying that the court has decided this, but let's just assume that VA general counsel opinions are the type of things that was in Justice Kagan's mind in Kaiser. Right? Let's just assume that, okay? And assume that that precedent opinion, the one you're pointing to here, isn't sufficient standing alone to support the agency's interpretation, but something else that might not be entitled to deference. Let's just assume the FAST letter. I'm just assuming, okay? The agency's position here is if you take one thing that doesn't satisfy the stringent test for courts to defer and another thing that does, and you combine them, I think the agency's position is that's sufficient to defer, even though part of it is something that standing alone we wouldn't defer to?
Your Honor, I certainly think we can defer to GC Precedent Opinion 9-2004 for the reasons that I've laid out. But I think that there should be a holistic analysis regarding whether the agency's interpretation is a convenient litigating position or the established view of the Secretary.
So are you aware of any, this is not a trap, it's a real question, right? Are you aware of any cases following Kaiser that has had to wrestle with this issue? Because the reason I'm saying that is it actually is complicated, right? Because the precedent opinion binds the board, right? We know that. But we also know from our case law that it does not bind us. Right? But we're assuming there are situations in which we will defer to the precedent opinion. But this is an odd thing because the precedent opinion itself doesn't answer the question directly. It's part of your answer. And so we're not bound by it. We sometimes could defer to it, but do we defer to it when it doesn't answer the full scope of the question? I'm just suggesting this is an open issue, as far as I know, in administrative law about how you can cobble together more than one source of authority when all of the each of them independently wouldn't warrant Kaiser deference. And so I'm assuming you don't have any magic case that you found about that.
Unfortunately not, Your Honor. This is kind of recent precedent that we're dealing with. The only precedent that I'm aware of upon my review was several circuit decisions from the 4th, 7th, and 9th Circuit noting that Kaiser and Auer were not changed in the wake of Loper-Bright.
Right. Well, this was the your supplemental authority, right? Yes. I mean, I agree with that. I'm not sure that really goes to this question. Because we certainly wouldn't be in a position to say, I think that the Supreme Court's decision in Kaiser isn't good law after its decision in Loper when it didn't say it. So I agree with it that far. Thank you. I'm sorry I threw you off your game there.
But I would go further to note that this appeared to be the Secretary's position in Mitchell itself. The Secretary's position was described by this court as regarding the supplemental pleading as arguing that compensation for such pain, whether arthritic or non-arthritic in nature, is limited to 10% per joint. And we've argued before this court in FOBS as well that a rating reduction under DC 5003 was a proper when appellant's non-compensable limitation of motion subsequently became compensable. I welcome the court's questions.
If I could turn back to the plain language analysis. How do you read the phrase under the appropriate diagnostic codes in the first and second sentences of 5003? Under the first sentence, is it referring to the full array of limitation of motion diagnostic codes? And then do you read it the same or different under the second sentence?
Yes, Your Honor. So I think that the appropriate diagnostic codes would be any potentially applicable diagnostic code rating for limitation of motion for the at-issue joint. And that if an appellant had a compensable limitation of motion for that joint, that analysis under the second and third sentences or scenarios would end. But if there was no compensable limitation of motion, that you would consider those same diagnostic codes being plural before a singular rating of 10% was available for that joint.
So how do you read the language that we were discussing with counsel? When the limitation of motion is non-compensable, is there a way to read that as saying we still look at this sentence even if there is some compensable limitation of motion?
Your Honor, I don't think there's anything in DC 5003 that would support a continuation of the analysis. It seems that the purpose of 5003 is to ensure that an appellant who has arthritis is not left without a compensable rating of some sort. And so if the first criterion is satisfied, then we don't need to continue with the analysis.
Let me follow up about what the board actually said in the decision on appeal. Do you think the board did the right analysis? The board actually referred to 4.59 instead of
digested for
5003.
Just want to ensure.
I'm talking about the left.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, could you repeat your question for me?
Did the board do the correct analysis in talking about whether a rating was available for painful motion in 4.59 as opposed to for non-compensable limited motion?
Honor, I'm not sure that what the board did, whether it rated under 4.59 or 5003, would have made a material difference. Both of those are designed to provide an appellant at least a minimal compensable rating for painful motion. So appellant certainly could not receive a rating under 4.59 and DC 5003 because they would be rating the same joint for painful motion in that joint. As far as the 10% rating under 5010-5261, that rating would be protected, which is why the board explained that it was not reduced, and then appellant could retain the 5261 rating because he had actual limitation of motion that was compensable. So yes, I do believe that the board undertook the correct analysis.
If the board, I want to make sure that I'm clear. If the board, let's assume that the question that Judge Meredith asked you, the answer is yes, the board performed the wrong analysis because it didn't go under 5003, it went under 4.59. Would that, in the Secretary's view, affect our ability to reach the legal question about the meaning of 5003 if the board didn't apply it itself to the left knee?
I'm sorry, could you rephrase your question?
Sure. Let's just, I'm going to simplify it in my head, right? Let's just assume that Law A is the law that should have been applied and the board applied Law B, mm-hmm. right? Would it affect our ability to say what Law A meant because the board actually itself didn't apply Law A, it applied Law B?
Your Honor.
Or would we have to send it back so the board could apply the correct legal principle to allow us to then assess the issue, or would we be able to say what the law is, meaning Law A, even though the board didn't apply it?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that you would have to reach this question.
Which question?
I'm not sure you would have to reach the interpretation, the correct interpretation of DC 5003 if you find that 4.59 kind of was more or less appropriately applied. And I think that, as I explained to Judge Meredith, it would not materially affect the outcome whether the board applied DC 5003 or 4.59 because they're both based on painful motion.
And so, and then I'm going to stop and let Judge Meredith continue, but I just want to make sure that I'm following this. So are you, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, are you essentially saying that any error that infected the board's decision by not using 5003, I'm just assuming that's the case, and using 4.59 was harmless error because it, again, my words, six of one, half dozen of another? Is that essentially the Secretary's position?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that that's a position because the essence of the question regarding the left and right, the left knee in particular, is whether appellant can have multiple minimum compensable ratings. That answer, whether you use 4.59 or DC 5003, is no, because he already has a rating based on painful motion.
So continuing on with what the board said about the right knee, you acknowledged in your brief that the board misidentified which diagnostic code is used to rate the appellant's right knee currently, and that there's some confusion as to the history of his ratings on that knee. The appellant seems to be asking us for a remand for the board to clear that up. Can we do that in the first instance? Can we clear up the confusion as to that knee?
Your Honor, again, I would say that it's not entirely necessary. Whether appellant was rated under 5257 or another like minimum compensable rating for limitation of motion, he's being adequately compensated. I'm not sure what useful purpose a remand would serve.
So you suggest that in your briefing, I think you suggest that it would be possible in certain circumstances to get a rating under and a 5003 rating, as long as the 5257 wasn't based on motion.
Your Honor.
So did the board here say whether or not his 5257 rating is for painful motion? And a follow-up question on that is that appropriate in light of, if it is, cases like Wiles that suggest that the old version of 5257 only compensated for the specific things that are listed, like instability?
Your Honor, regarding 5257 in this context, my understanding was that the rating provided at the time under 5257 was kind of a catch-all disability code. And the RO's clarification of what appellant had at the time of the decision didn't change the fact that it was being rated based on painful motion.
Do you think we have sufficient board findings? The board suggested that the evidence shows he has limitations to pain. This is reflected in his current rating, but the board misidentified what it thought the current rating was under. So, again, this is confusion that we can clear up, or the board would need to do in the first place.
I don't think a remand is necessary, Your Honor, because they're both based on painful motion.
What is both based on?
So
is this proceeding from the point of view that 5257 was a catch-all?
It certainly, my understanding of the code at that time was that it is used as a catch-all.
Maybe I should know this because it's in the briefing, and I apologize if I'm missing it. What's the source of authority for saying that 5257 was used at the time as a catch-all?
Your Honor, that is my understanding based on a discussion with...
So is this Eckerd, is this entirely outside of the scope of this? I'm not suggesting this is what happened, but the proverbial around the water cooler, somebody tells you and... I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to get that your understanding is based on what somebody at the agency told you, but we don't have anything in front of us on that. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, that's not our sole basis. Appellant's rating under the right knee was increased in 2010 based on painful motion. That rating has remained unchanged.
Okay, but now you're sort of straying into what happened in this case where we'd have to be. So there's nothing you can cite us to that says that 5257 in its prior incarnation was used as a catch-all and not just for limitation of motion and the other thing that's going out of my head, which isn't 5257.
The only thing I can point to, Your Honor, is the title of 5257, which notes that. Notes that it rates for other, but in the circumstances of this case, appellant has at all times been rated for painful motion for the right knee.
And not instability under 5257?
No, Your Honor. The 1995 rating decision where 5257 was originally described noted that appellant had no instability, no laxity, no subluxation, normal range of motion, as well as no frequent episodes of locking pain or effusion. So it systematically went through all the potentially applicable disability codes and concluded that, and then provided a rating based on 5257. The August 2022 board decision makes clear that that rating was based on painful motion.
There's a couple of other confusing juxtapositions like that, too, I think. The board, relying on the April 2010 exam, said that the evidence shows that the flexion limitation was due to pain. The exam itself said there was no pain on flexion.
Sorry, Your Honor, could you repeat the latter half of your question?
The board observed that the evidence showed that the veteran's limitation of flexion to 90 degrees was due to pain. But a contemporaneous examination report, VA examination report, said there was no pain on range of motion testing for this is the right knee that we're talking about at that time. Also, the board analyzed it under the pyramiding rule or the anti-pyramiding rule instead of as a 5003 matter.
Would you mind if I took a second to confer with co-counsel?
I would not mind.
Your Honor, while I understand your concern, appellant's rating based on the limitation of motion at that time would be non-compensable. And so because he still had a rating based on painful motion, not quite seeing how it would be relevant to the analysis here.
This is a wacky thought. But as I've been sitting here listening to the case, it really strikes me that there's a lot of weird stuff here in the procedural history, the determination about what 5257 might or might not have met in the old version. Is it just a catch-all, throw anything in there or not? What did the board do with the right knee? Has there been any consideration by the secretary to think about the fact that there's so much messiness here? This isn't the place where you want the court to be stepping in to say what the law is, because it's not even clear what the board did.
Your Honor, I'm not sure that it is unclear what the board did. I understand the concern regarding 5257, but I don't think we need to rely on that alone, because the board went through each potentially applicable diagnostic code in 1995. And determined that the only possible explanation was a rating based on painful motion. Regarding most of the other issues, because appellant has a rating based on painful motion, it would be inappropriate to assign another rating based on painful motion, making DC 5003, if nothing else, harmless error, not to apply. And regarding the right knee,
and that's the secretary's position, even though the motion is a completely different one. If it's painful motion, it's all the
same. Yes, Your Honor, that's our position. A veteran is only entitled to one single compensable limitation of motion per joint, minimum compensable rating per joint.
And so that seems like it could be in tension with the fact that the secretary in employing the rating schedule has made choices about the fact that for certain joints he will use several different diagnostic codes to reflect different planes of motion, and under the precedential opinion it will be treated separately. But then in others, like the shoulder, the secretary has decided that one diagnostic code is going to do this no matter which plane of motion is affected. Do you see any tension in those positions?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. In a lot of the other disability codes, there are actually different planes of motion. And while we describe flexion and extension as different planes of motion, that's really a misnomer. As appellant noted in his supplemental pleading,
you need some water? You can get some water. It's okay.
No, I'm okay. Thank you. As appellant noted in his supplemental pleading, a knee really only moves in two different directions within a single plane. I think that makes that distinguishable from a lot of the other diagnostic codes that you had expressed a bit of concern about.
Well, but so let's assume there was another diagnostic code that had two honest-to-God different planes of motion, okay? I feel like I'm back in physics or something. The Secretary's position, though, would be the same, right? It would be the same in the sense that you only get one 10% rating no matter what, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be our position.
Okay. Anything else? Feel free to wrap up, or you can continue to have some additional time. Well,
seeing no further questions from the court, the Secretary asks you to affirm the August 22 board decision and hold that DC 5003, by its plain language and structure, creates three separate and distinct scenarios that are independent from one another. But if you had to reach the second scenario, that only a single 10% rating is applicable per major joint. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dahakis, we'll give you your 7 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start with the deference piece, and then I want to touch on 5257. But I want to make sure we talk about deference, because one of the things that's very that struck me with the Secretary's different pleadings is that their arguments in their written briefs to this case contradict what they argued in prior cases. And in particular, the Secretary's position is in this case that Mr. D is being rated for painful motion by virtue of his limited motion. But DeLuca very clearly held that pain is not rated under the limitation of motion necessarily. Now, it certainly can be if it causes limited motion, but DeLuca and what the court said is the court rejected the Secretary's argument that the DC, based upon limited motion, already, and I'm quoting here, contemplated the functional loss resulting from pain on undertaking motion or subsumed the factors listed in 4.40 and 4.45. So what that means is that the pain is a separate or can represent a separate disability. And in particular, Wallerman recognizes that. We had the instability, and then there was the court talked about the minimal symptoms that are necessary under, I think it was 5259. And there was one of those was pain. And so if there is a symptomatic meniscal surgery represented by pain, that pain can be separately rated, but it's not necessarily encompassed underneath the specific diagnostic codes. And that goes back again to Copeland, where this court said that when there's a specific diagnostic code, 4.27 primarily requires the VA to rate it under that diagnostic code. And you can't bring in other impairments just because we want to try to minimize the ratings that Mr. D is receiving. General Counsel, so going to deference, the Secretary's position has kind of changed both from when they first started this briefing, but also in prior decisions. One other example, in the supplemental brief on page 5-7, the Secretary argues that Mitchell held that painful motion is the equivalent to limited motion only under Diagnostic Code 5003, but in Burton, this court specifically held that painful motion, as described in 4.59, is not limited to arthritis. And the Secretary himself advanced this same interpretation to the court in Burton. So, and in Burton, actually, I think they changed their position before, between the memo decision and the precedential decision, and now they're reverting back to their prior incorrect position. So all that to say is that deference is afforded only when it is a considered and authoritative interpretation offered by the Secretary. Here, we don't have that. We have inconsistent positions, we have incorrect positions, and most specifically, 9-2004, the General Counsel opinion, the Secretary agrees that this recognizes that flexion and extension are separate disabilities. To the extent that the FAST letter says anything about limiting a rating in the knee for arthritis to a single rating, that is completely inconsistent, as we've said, with 4.25 and 1110, in addition to 9-2004, which again specifically says that limited flexion is different than limited extension. We also need to keep in mind that what this really boils down to is whether Mr. D is being improperly pyramiding his ratings. He is not. 4.14 says to not rate the same disability under two different diagnostic codes. 9-2004 very clearly says it is a different disability, and so it cannot be pyramiding. And this is also supported by Wallerman, Esteban, and others throughout the years. The FAST letter.
Although this really isn't a pyramiding question, at least I hadn't thought about it that way under 5003, right? Because isn't the question that 5003, the legal question is, does it allow more than one or not, right? And so I guess I'm just trying to think about whether pyramiding adds anything that isn't about the statutory interpretation question.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I think that the Secretary's position is that Mr. D is asking for another rating for his pain. And they've said this over and over again. And we want to be clear. Mr. D is not asking to compensate pain, particularly for the left knee or for the right knee flexion. He has documented, undisputed, limited motion in each of those, as the board found. And really what the Secretary's interpretation is doing is requiring the VA to mash together these two with the knee, these two separate disabilities into one rating, when everything else from Esteban to Wallerman has said that they are separate and distinct disabilities. 4.25 requires the VA to separately rate those. To Judge Meredith's point on 4.59, again, DeLuca says that limitation of motion does not necessarily compensate for pain. Now, I read the board's decision, to do both. If you look at page 19, it says, since a 10% rating is for limited extension is already assigned, a separate rating for limited flexion under 5003 is not warranted due to the anti-pyramiding rule. And then it goes into, and also 4.59 doesn't offer you any relief as well. Again, we're not necessarily asking for a rating under 4.59, particularly for the left knee. That may come into play for the right knee, but again, the facts are not clear on what exactly his impairments are, which is why we're asking for the remand. To the last thing, I'm almost out of time, and I'll hope that the court will let me finish this last point. Diagnostic code 5257, once again, the Secretary has confused. 5257 was recently amended. It now says and uses the term other impairments. In 1995, it was very explicit for instability or subluxation. So when the VA rated him under that diagnostic code, it had to have made a finding that he suffered from that impairment. Whether he did or not, and I recognize that the rating decision says he didn't have it, but they're stuck with that mistake because it's now protected, assuming it was a mistake. the notion that this is a catch-all rating is completely at odds with his argument that he presented to this court in Southall Norman. And as we pointed out in a reply brief, his position in 2016 was that painful motion could only be rated under a diagnostic code for limited motion. Southall Norman said that that was his position in 2016, and now he's arguing that the court's ruling in Southall Norman was actually his position all along, which is that it could be a catch-all. So the notion that in the 1990s he was rating this as a catch-all is completely at odds with his position before this court in Southall Norman in 2016. So if I can just summarize.
I was going to say if you can.
Yes, Your Honor. So deference. It has to be within the zone of ambiguity. The zone of ambiguity is informed, as we talked about in our briefs, incorporating the Probeck canon, which we didn't get to. I was hoping to. And we would ask that the court find that 5003, the plain language, there is no ambiguity, but to the extent there is, Secretary's interpretation is not entitled to any deference.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins.
Thank you.
We want to thank both parties for your helpful arguments and briefing in this deceptively complicated case for me. And with that, we'll come down and greet counsel. But with that, the case is submitted.
All right.